Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on the English program. I'm Linda Bordoni, and here's a taste of what we'll be talking about today. Pope Benedict XVI invites all people to hope in the Lord in 2010. US bishops observe National Migration Week with a full program of initiatives geared to help Catholics take stock of the wide diversity of the Church and the ministries serving them. Benedictine abbot Timothy Wright reflects on the Feast of the Epiphany and on the fact that it is the moment that binds the whole human race together in this event. And film critic Peter Malone tells us about The Road, the story of a father and son who undertake an epic journey at the end of civilization. Pope Benedict XVI on Sunday invited people to hope in the Lord in this coming year. The Pope's words came during his Angelus address in St. Peter's Square. Lydia O'Kane has this report.
Our hope is not counting on improbable predictions or economic forecasts, although they are important. Our hope is in God. Those were Pope Benedict's words from the window of the papal apartments during his first Sunday Angelus of 2010.
I problemi non mancano nella chiesa e nel mondo.
He told the thousands gathered in St. Peter's Square that in this new year there will still be problems in the world, for families, and also for the Church. But he invited all present to hope in the Lord, who, in Jesus Christ, revealed his complete and definitive desire to be with man, sharing his story and guiding us all to his kingdom of love and life. Still, acknowledged the Pope, the divine plan is not achieved automatically. It is a project of love, and with love brings freedom. Every man and woman, he continued, is responsible for accepting the Lord into their lives every day. In this way, 2010 will become more or less good to the extent that each, according to his or her responsibilities, cooperates with the grace of God.
Che 2010 sarà più o meno buono nella misura in cui ciascuno.
The Holy Father added that whenever the Lord wants to move forward together with us to the promised land, he knocks first on our hearts, waiting for our yes in the small as well as in the great choices.
Sit nomen Domini benedictum,
ex hoc nunc et usque in saeculum.
The Holy Father concluded his Angelus by greeting all those present, including all the English-speaking pilgrims.
As we continue to rejoice in the birth of Christ our Saviour, let us pray for the grace to live through love in his presence. Thus, like John the Baptist in today's Gospel, we can be witnesses to the light that enlightens the whole of creation. Upon each of you and your loved ones at home, I invoke God's abundant blessings.
I'm Lydia O'Kane.
Thanks there to Lydia O'Kane for that report. Renewing hope, seeking justice, is the theme of the 2010 National Migration Week, an event held each year between January the 3rd and the 9th. The observance began over 25 years ago by the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops to be a moment for Catholics to take stock of the wide diversity of the Church and the ministries serving them. Following the lead of Pope Benedict, who is focusing on minor migrants and refugees for the 2010 World Day of Migrants and Refugees, the North American bishops are focusing on migrant children as a sub-theme this year. My colleague Irene Lagan, who works on the news desk, spoke to the Bishop of Salt Lake City, Utah, Father John Wester, who, by the way, is also chairman of the USCCB Committee of Migration.
This is an annual event for us in the Church of the United States, and we've kept the same title always because we wanted to kind of people to identify with it, renewing hope, you know, that we have to live in hope and in solidarity with our brothers and sisters who are immigrants, refugees, and asylum seekers here in the United States, but really throughout the world. But particularly in the United States, that's where our main focus is. And it's meant to be an educational tool so that people, schools, for example, parishes, Catholic institutions, will all gather around this theme during that week in January and heighten an awareness of the plight of the immigrant and also educate themselves on the facts and hopefully in our country to promote and to advocate for comprehensive immigration reform. We believe that our immigration laws in the United States are no longer adequate to deal with the current situation in our country as we face the immigrants who come in here, refugees, asylum seekers, etc. And as a consequence, we do have about 12 to 20 million people who are undocumented persons, many, if not most of whom, just overstayed their visas. So our hope is that we can help people to see that our country, the United States of America, was really founded by immigrants, and that throughout our history, immigrants have played a pivotal role in our country and have promoted quite a bit of good in our country. There's really been the backbone of our country. So we wish to help people to see that it's a win-win situation. It's a win for the country. It's a win for the immigrants.
Now, certainly this issue of immigration reform has been going on for several years. What in particular at this point in time would you like to see as part of that reform? And also, what are the challenges that immigrants face?
Well, yes, in June of 2007, we really almost had an immigration reform package. It was a bipartisan bill that was being put forward, but at the last minute it failed. I think in part that was because those who oppose us on immigration reform were more vocal than we were, and our legislators heard them more than us. But I really do believe that there's a will in our country to pass immigration reform, but there are some very loud and strident voices who are against it. And that's sad to me because, again, we believe as a Catholic Church that all human beings have a right to live a full life, a happy life, a life where they can provide for themselves and their families. And many people, sad to say, feel they have to leave their home countries to find a better life. We do believe as a church that all countries have to work hard to do away with the reasons why people are leaving their home countries in the first place. That's a long-term solution. But in the meantime, we believe that people who come to our shores, that we need to accept them. We do believe that there needs to be law. The country has the right to defend its borders, and that's important. And we have to have orderly immigration and legal immigration. And that's why we want reform, because we believe that with reform, we can have legal, orderly immigration. People can come here, become citizens, and many people, frankly, will come and go. They would like to come, work temporarily, and go back home again, and then come in the next year. And that we estimate upwards of 200,000 people or more certainly would like to do that. So the reform is really the way to go in our minds, but there are some who, for various reasons, are against immigrants coming in. For example, they say the immigrants take jobs from citizens that are already here. Our studies show that's not true. As a matter of fact, our studies show that immigrants create new jobs and help entrepreneurs to form new businesses, and oftentimes will take jobs that nobody else will take. Some people say that immigrants will be a burden to our systems, our medical systems, for example, our school systems, etc. Again, our studies show quite the opposite, that immigrants support our systems. Immigrants pay into the system. They pay taxes, property taxes, sales taxes, income taxes. And quite often, the immigrants do not derive the benefits from those taxes, but they are paying in nonetheless. So it's interesting to me to note that the immigrants are really helping our country in many ways. I could go on and on. You know, when you look at the statistics and the data, you realize that, as I said earlier, it really is a win-win. So to those who oppose immigration reform, I would just say, please, you know, look at this, at the data. I know they do. I suppose they interpret it differently than we do, but I do believe that we're right.
Now, what about the issue of human trafficking? We hear a lot about that now, and certainly here in Rome, I see it. I see it quite openly. Is this a problem that people are aware of, or how are you drawing attention to this issue as well?
Well, this is a big issue, really, and our Holy Father, in his address on immigration, I believe it was last October, Pope Benedict put the spotlight on the human trafficking within the immigrant culture and society. Particularly, the Holy Father underlined the tragedy of minors who are immigrants and minors who are abused and get caught up in human trafficking. And the Holy Father mentioned how important it is for us to be aware of their plight, and that regardless of the laws of the country or where we need to go, where we are, we need to go, no matter what, right now, this day, we have to look out for our children, and we have to make sure that they don't get caught up in trafficking. They're more vulnerable to human traffickers because they don't have anywhere to go to. They don't have a home base, so to speak. Their support systems are weak, and it's difficult for them. And also, children are very susceptible because they tend to be believing and trusting. And these human traffickers prey on that. So this is a real big problem. And, of course, adults, too, get caught up in human trafficking. Immigrants are easy prey. When I was just back, came back a few months ago from Harare, Zimbabwe, and we were studying the situation there, and when many of the Zimbabweans who were fleeing into South Africa, many of the women and girls are, once they get over the border, they're not seen anymore. And we're convinced that many of them are getting caught up in human trafficking. So this is a real problem. It's a problem in the United States, although I think people don't like to think about it. They don't care to believe that that's true, but in fact, we know that it is true, that many people are caught up in human trafficking, and that's a particular concern to our church.
And then I guess one last question. What are you suggesting, or what can ordinary parishioners do, either to become more aware or to reach out and affect some kind of change or difference in the both the plight of people who are undocumented as well as victims who are caught in human trafficking?
Well, of course, there are lots of things, you know, parishes can do on a local level. If there are immigrants, refugees, people who you suspect may be caught up in trafficking, you know, to report that to authorities, to do what you can to be welcoming, to organize parishes so that they can receive people and help them through the system and help get them assistance. On a national level in the United States, we're organizing a postcard campaign. And I would strongly urge all parishes, all parishioners and dioceses in the United States to participate and to send a postcard. We've the Justice for Immigrants campaign here in the United States is providing postcards. We're sending them all out to all the bishops that wish them. And so the people can send postcards to the senators and to the House of Representatives, their representatives there, and to make their voice known that we do want immigration reform. I believe that it's such an important issue that not to speak, not to do anything, is to really side with those who would be against immigration reform. We're at a point now where not to decide is to decide. We have to make our voices heard. And even beyond the postcards, which are very important, then to use electronic media, emails, blogs, whatever it takes, Twitters, I don't know what's on there these days, but to get the word out that we need, that our legislators, we really do want immigration reform. I know our country is caught up in the health care reform right now, and that's a very, very important issue, as is the economy. But so is immigration, and immigration cannot continue to take a back seat to all the other issues. We've got to do something, and so I think what the average citizen or Catholic can do is to make his or her voice heard.
That was Father John Wester, Bishop of Salt Lake City, Utah, and chairman of the USCCB Committee on Migration. On January the 6th, we celebrate the Epiphany. It's the feast commemorating Christ's manifestation to the Gentiles in the person of the Magi, and according to the Catholic Dictionary, it began in the East in the 3rd century and soon spread to the West, where it is identified with the visit of the three kings. In some countries, it's known as Twelfth Night, and it is the occasion for special celebrations. But that's rather dry, isn't it? I asked Benedictine abbot, Timothy Wright, for his reflections as we think back to that momentous moment in history when three wise men travelled afar to pay tribute to the baby Jesus.
On the 6th of January in the Western Church, we keep the feast of the Epiphany, which is the moment when the three wise men, sometimes called the three kings, visit Jesus, the newly born Jesus, in Bethlehem. Its importance lies in the fact that it is the moment when the world beyond the chosen people, beyond the Jewish people, came to acknowledge the importance and uniqueness of this baby Jesus, bringing gifts from the East. It's a wonderful moment because it's the moment that binds the whole human race together in this event, because those three wise men represent all the rest of us who are not Jewish people. And that is a very powerful thought, particularly in a world of 6 billion people of many different languages living in vastly different climates and different social and economic conditions. It's a moment when dialogue, when recognition, when mutual respect are virtues which are exemplified in the way that the Holy Family received these guests and accepted their offerings. And these three guests recognize the significance of this baby in the honor they paid, in the gestures they used. One of the ways over this Christmas period where we can ponder the Christian message is by looking at the many works of art that are portrayed in Christmas cards and other pictures. And I have collected over the years a few of these cards and would like to share one or two of them with you, simply as a way of illustrating this unique and important feast. There is a mosaic, the Adoration of the Magi, in the Basilica of Santa Maria Maggiore, which represents Mary holding Jesus in a sort of rather more stable building than you would find as a cave. But the kings advance one behind the other, bearing their gifts, and the first, in paying homage to Jesus, has removed his crown, and the others are following up behind. A recognition in art that this is something special. And the Jesus, the baby Jesus, is shown in the mosaic to be rather older than a few days from his birth. When we get a little further down the line in the works of Giotto, we have another style. We have the baby smaller this time, but the first king is on his knees kissing the feet of the baby Jesus. But the baby Jesus is not only with his mother and father, but also with angels. This is a moment when the world outside is coming to recognize what God has done. If we advance again, we find in the 15th century, in the works of Fra Angelico in Florence, we have again a different sort of picture. This time a picture of a house with the kings assembled alongside, but the same gesture. The kings kissing the feet of the baby Jesus, paying homage. And we look again in the works of Georges de Latour, a much simpler representation. This time the gifts coming from people from behind, pictured coming from behind, looking outwards with the baby Jesus asleep, serenely, no touching, no adoration. Advancing down the centuries, we find in the Franz von Roden of the 19th century's nativity scene, a much more elaborate, no more people around, the kings again obeying before Jesus. This time, Jesus showing some recognition, not kissing at the feet, but eye contact to eye contact. Mary quietly holding Jesus, watching, and Jesus looking intently into the eyes of the king. And finally, just to show that it's not always obedience and it's not always something mind expanding, a Christmas card with a different sort of story. A Christmas card of a boy, probably done while he was at primary school, with the three kings advancing in rather stiff fashion with their crowns on their heads, to Jesus almost lost in his manger. The poignancy of that card is that that young man was to die in a car accident a few years ago, age 19. Yes, in birth and in adoration, we look forward to death and resurrection. And as we contemplate this feast, there will be many people who carry within them that sense of sorrow, of separation, which death has brought to them in recent months and years, a death which they perhaps haven't always got over. And there is always a sense that in our community of mankind, we bring death to each other by our rivalry, our competitiveness, by our intolerance, our inability to forgive, for all sorts of reasons. And yet, in this one feast, where the three wise men approach the Holy Family, the King of Kings, Jesus, Son of God, as baby, we know that the seeds of being one, of being tolerant and forgiving, of being able to live in a world where the space is becoming more limited, where the greed and the competitiveness are becoming more destructive. But we know that the challenge to live for the other has never been greater. And the journey that those three wise men made, the journey across culture, across a desert, across a whole religious world to another, is a journey that each of us is yearning to make. And those of us who are Christians and accepting in this birth, recognizing the significance of this visit, know it's our responsibility to portray it in ways that Jesus would recognize, ways of openness, of affirmation, ways of encouragement, ways of forgiveness, ways of optimism, ways of hope, ways of life without end. And that within that context, our weakness and sin can, if we are prepared to allow it, be forgiven, be accepted, and the pains that we inflict on each other can become reduced as we reflect that behind all pain there is a God who is love, who shared his life with us in a unique way in Jesus Christ, and empowers us now through the Holy Spirit to go on living that life, affirming every man, woman, or child whom we meet as God in front of me. That is the mystery of that visit to Bethlehem by those three wise men. The God in Jesus recognized the creating Father, the God present in those three visitors, and the significance of their visit. That is the example for each of us, whatever corner of this limited world we live, and whatever environment we find ourselves in. And it is God with us, deeper than our tragedies and our sufferings and our pain, offering hope. A hope, difficult as it may be, a hope which endures. Amen.
And now it's over to my friend, film critic Peter Malone, who heads the film office at Cygnus, the World Catholic Association for Communication. Today he talks about a film that narrates an epic journey by father and son at the end of civilization. The Road, it's actually based on a book that I enjoyed very much.
By Cormac McCarthy?
Yes.
Grim stuff?
Grim stuff, but very, very powerful, the book, and the film also looks powerful.
Well, I've read some people are a bit dissatisfied with the film in the sense that they felt a film couldn't be made of the book, but they praise the director, who I'd better put in brackets, Australian John Hillcoate, has kept at least the spirit of it and the atmosphere and the look from the book.
Officials have declared a state of emergency.
What's happening?
I don't know. Cannot be contained.
Advised a sudden drop in temperature. What you see is happening now.
I hadn't read the book, and I saw this film at the Venice Film Festival, and I would have given it an award at once. I was very impressed by it.
Was it in any way recommended or singled out at the festival?
It wasn't, in fact. It was in competition, but it had fairly good reviews, but it didn't finish up winning any of the awards.
As you say, it's a beautifully made film which won't appeal to a wide audience who may not be attracted by its post-apocalyptic scenario.
How many people do you think are still alive?
In the world? Not very many.
It's the story of a surviving father and son in a post-apocalyptic scenario, isn't it?
That boy looks hungry. Why don't y'all come on the truck?
You look at him again, I'll shoot you in the head.
I don't think you killed a man in your life.
It is, and it's extraordinary the way that they're filmed in, again, as we talked about earlier with New Moon, it's filmed in the Northwest as well as Louisiana and then in more ordinary scenes in Pennsylvania. So, in a sense, it's a road movie covering so many aspects of the United States, but in this devastated world.
Everything depends on reaching the coast.
I told you I would do whatever it takes.
It's about surviving, isn't it?
It's very much about surviving and the love between the father and the son. And I'd have to say that Viggo Mortensen, as the father, gives a wonderful performance.
Kill anyone who touches you, because that's my job.
The boy, Cody Smits McPhee, bracket, also from Australia, grows on you.
We're going to die.
We're not going to quit.
I wasn't so struck with him at first. But I should mention also there's some small cameos by Charlize Theron as the wife in the flashbacks. And then they meet a vagrant. And I couldn't quite place him for the moment, just from the look of him. But then I recognised the voice. And it's one of the best performances by Robert Duvall that I've seen in ages. So not only does it look good and is well dramatised, the performances are also very, very good.
Well, I'll end with a quote from your own review. A fine film, regrettably not going to be seen as much as it should be.
Yes, I think that's the case. I think people find it too difficult and the distributors, I'd imagine, won't push it as much as I would hope they should.
Just a note that the score is by Nick Cave as well.
He's a friend of John Hillcoate's.
Oh, really?
And in fact, they made several films together. One called The Ghosts of the Civil Dead about 20 years ago in Australia, and then an outback Australian film in 2005, The Proposition, which Nick Cave wrote, because he writes novels as well as
yes,
the music.
Yes. Okay, thank you. You're listening to Vatican Radio's English programme. Laudetur Jesus Christus.